The question always bothered me, and I have another answer to this question, which we've mentioned in the past, but I saw this year a new answer that is really astounding. The question is the following. B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven come to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say, we want our portion not in Eretz Yisrael proper, but in Eber HaYarden, in Transjordan. So please don't cross us over the Yarden, don't take us with you into Eretz Yisrael. Give us our portion here. We have a lot of cattle, and this is good pasture land. Give us our portion here outside of Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu jumps down their throats immediately. You're a bunch of cowards. You are repeating the sin of the spies. They were afraid to go and fight for Eretz Yisrael, and you're also afraid, and that's why you want to stay here. It always bothered me. We have a halacha of Don Lekatzkos. You're supposed to judge people favorably. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu immediately assume the worst? That they're cowards, they don't want to fight. Why didn't he ask them? Do you mean that you don't want to go over into Eretz Yisrael at all? You don't want to help your brothers fight? Right? Or do you mean that you'll go over, you'll fight, and then you'll come back and get your portion here? Why didn't you ask them at least? Why do you immediately assume the worst? That's the question. Says the Akedas Yitzchak. Akedas Yitzchak was written by Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who was a Rishon. He lived in the, 1400s, maybe earlier, 1300s. He says the following. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu did not judge them unfavorably, just the opposite. He judged them favorably. Moshe Rabbeinu said there are two possibilities why these people want their portion outside of Eretz Yisrael. One possibility is they're afraid to go and fight. They're cowards. They don't have a lot of bitachon, not a lot of emunah, and they don't want to cross the Jordan because they're afraid. One possibility. The other possibility, they are not afraid. They would be willing to cross the Jordan and fight. They just don't want a portion in Eretz Yisrael because they don't appreciate Eretz Yisrael. They're not afraid. They would go over. They would fight. They just would rather have a portion outside of Eretz Yisrael because economically it's better for them. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I would rather believe that these people are cowards and that they're afraid to go and fight for Eretz Yisrael than to believe that they don't appreciate Eretz Yisrael and want a portion outside of Eretz Yisrael just like this. Very interesting, Akedas Yitzchak. So Moshe Rabbeinu, in fact, gave them the benefit of the doubt. And he accused them of being cowards because he couldn't imagine that if they weren't cowards, why would they want a portion outside of Eretz Yisrael? That means that they didn't appreciate Eretz Yisrael. That's something much more worse. That's something worse. Worse than having bitachon. Very interesting, Akedas Yitzchak. The truth is that based on this, we can explain a medrash. The medrash says, "Umikne Rav Hoyel of Reuven v'lev Gad," that the tribes of Reuven and Gad had a lot of cattle. Halacha. From this, we can learn a halacha, not in the normal sense of halacha of something to do, but how to think, how to approach things. That's also halacha. Halacha is called halichos olam. It's the byways, the highways of the world that give you a bearing, direction, how to go through this world properly. That's also halacha. What is this halacha? Shlosha matanos nivru uba olam. Three presents were created in this world. Zocha ba'achas mehem, notol chemdas kol ha'olam. If you merit any one of those three, you have the choice, preciousness of the whole world. Zocha b'chachma, the first present that God created, that if you merit that present, you have everything, is zocha b'chachma, zocha b'kol. If you have wisdom, you have everything. Zocha b'gvura, the second present is gvura, strength. Moral strength, physical strength. You have that, you have everything. Zocha b'osher, the last one is wealth. If you have wealth, you have everything. Amosai, when is that true? That these three presents lead to all good things, wisdom, strength, or wealth. Bizman shehin matno shamayim, ubos b'koach haTorah. When they are presents from heaven, and they come with the power of Torah, then each one of them is the whole world. But strength and wisdom and wealth that come from people themselves, ain't no klum, that's worthless. And these presents, where they don't come from God, then they won't last. They are very transient, very temporary. Excellent. But I have to give the shiur, so I have to ask that question. Excellent question. You're getting to think like me. So it's about time that you leave. Right. But we didn't finish the medrash yet, so I'm going to wait till I ask the question until we finish. V'chein at motzei b'nei God b'nei Reuven. You find that by b'nei God b'nei Reuven, shehayu ashirin, they were wealthy, v'hayu lahem nikne gadol, and they had a tremendous amount of cattle, v'chibibu es mamonam, and they held their money very precious, v'yashvu lahem chutz me'eretz Yisrael, and because of that, they lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's why they were exiled before all the other Shvatim. The first exile was from B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, because they held their money more precious than living in Eretz Yisrael. That's the message. The question, as Mrs. Goldstein so beautifully asked, how do you know if the present comes from God? I have a better question. Doesn't everything come from God? How can you get something that doesn't come from the Ribono Shel Olam? How can you grab wealth that God doesn't need? I think the Chochma, right, or anything, Gvura. Now the answer, I think, is that it's not whether it comes from God or not, but it's your perception. If you understand that your wisdom, your wealth, or your power is a present from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it comes to enhance your relationship with Him, then you will use your wealth, your wisdom, or your power to enhance your service of God. And if there's a conflict between your wealth, your wisdom, or your power, then you will yield to a conflict between that and your service of the Ribono Shel Olam. You'll yield on those things because these things are presents from God. They're obviously meant to be used to enhance your service of Him, not to conflict with it. But if you think these things are independent, they have nothing to do with the Ribono Shel Olam. You don't look at them as presents from God. You don't look at them as something that enhances your relationship to the Torah, but something that is intrinsic, individual to itself. Then if there's a conflict between your wealth or your wisdom or your power and service of God, you may opt for the wealth, the wisdom, or the power, and not the service of the Ribono Shel Olam. Same thing we find by B'nai God and B'nai Reuven. Had they realized that their wealth was an enhancement, a present from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that would enhance the relationship with God, then if they had this conflict, we think that we would do better off financially, better for our millions to remain in Chutz Laaretz rather than living in Eretz Yisrael, then there's a conflict between their spiritual lives and their wealth. They would have said, but God didn't give us our wealth to conflict and to deter our spiritual life. He must have given us the present to enhance it. So, obviously, we can live in Eretz Yisrael and also have material success. But they didn't see that. They didn't see it as a present from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw it as something intrinsic, separate to itself. And therefore, when there was a conflict between enhancing their wealth and enhancing their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by living in Eretz Yisrael, they chose to enhance their wealth as something separate from their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tzror Hamor, also an early commentary, says the following. He says that B'nai God and B'nai Reuven even fooled themselves to think that God himself wanted them to live in Chutz Laaretz. Why? They said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll quote what he says, Amru l'Moshe Rabbeinu, Al titam ala chetetz, don't be surprised that we want our portion in outside of Eretz Yisrael. Kikach and Shino, Eber HaYarden isn't totally outside of Eretz Yisrael. For certain laws, it has the laws of Eretz Yisrael. It's just not on the same level as Eretz Yisrael proper. Okay, so they didn't live totally in Chutz Laaretz. But compared to Eretz Yisrael, it was considered Chutz La'aretz. Compared to Chutz La'aretz, it's considered Eretz Yisrael. It's in twilight zone, somewhere in between, right? So they didn't actually live totally in Chutz La'aretz, but since they could have lived in Eretz Yisrael proper, and they chose to live in a place that was a level less, that was considered like living in Chutz La'aretz. So they said, Kikach Gozra Chachmasa Yisbara, God already decreed that we should have our portion outside of Eretz Yisrael. Mimei Olam, from way back in history, Shetia Nachlaseinu B'chutz La'aretz, Mimaymer Imenu, our mother, Leah, when she named the tribe God, what did she say? Bo God. What does that mean? Yavo God, V'yoshuv li'artzo b'gdudo v'anoshach. God will go and conquer Eretz Yisrael together with the other tribes, and then he will come back and return to his portion. What does that imply? That his portion will not be in the place where they conquered. It'll be back somewhere else. So Leah herself hinted to the fact that God will get his portion outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'zeu shi amar Yaakov. And our father Yaakov also hinted to it in his blessing to us. God gedud yegudenu v'hu yagud okay. God will go out with his legions and he'll come back with his legions. Come back to where? Must be that he'll go out with his legions to conquer Eretz Yisrael and come back to his portion outside of Eretz Yisrael. Ramus ha'inyin hazeh b'masha amra leya b'god. However, they made a mistake. And just the opposite. Instead of having this hint, there's another hint. When Leah said, Ba God, which really is two words, Ba God, God will come. And they took that as a hint that God will come back to his portion after they conquer Eretz Yisrael, meaning that his portion is not in Eretz Yisrael. But Leah, when she said it as one word, Ba God. The word Ba God means rebel, treachery, treacherous, rebellious. The Mila Achas Kloma, Leah HaBegida HaGdola Shasidim B'nei God Lasos. Leah foresaw this tremendous treachery, this tremendous rebellion that her children were going to do. V'hisharim b'chutz la'aretz, b'eretz Sichon va'og. The fact that they remained outside of Eretz Yisrael and didn't take their portion in Eretz Yisrael. V'zem merit gadol. This is a tremendous rebellion. B'mo'asam b'eretz tova rechava. They were disgusted with the good and broad land, Eretz HaKdosha, the holy land, Tzvihi l'chol ha'ratzos, it's the choice land of all other lands. V'chein b'shevet Reuven, the same thing with Reuven. Till now we're talking about God. Reuven also chose to have his portion outside of Eretz Israel. Ramaz Yaakov b'brichoso, when Yaakov blessed the tribe of Reuven, he hinted also to this rebellion. V'omro pachas kamayim altosa, you were impetuous. You were too quick. You were quick like water. Kilomar ki pachzu miru kamayim v'mrutzasam lishor b'chutz la'aretz. You were too quick to take your portion outside of Eretz Yisrael and couldn't wait to get your portion in Eretz Yisrael. V'zeu she'omar ki bo nachlaseinu eleinu. They said, our portion already came to us from way back in history. Our mother already hinted that we're going to get our portion outside of Eretz Yisrael. The afal pikein hadavar haya b'bechirasim. They didn't realize, though, that true, there was a hint like that, but there was a hint the other way, too, that this was a terrible thing to do. So what was it to depend on? Their free choice. They could make the hint the positive or the negative. They had the choice. Ubogdu b'ashem, and they chose to rebel against God. Ubachru b'eretz tmeya, they picked a defiled land. The chashvu, the fishahoyalohem, nikne rab, ugdudim rab, and why did they make that choice? Because they thought, since they had so much, cattle, and so many people, Eretz Yisrael ketana mehem, Eretz Yisrael is too small for them. Eretz Yisrael wouldn't be good for them. They're too rich, too big, to be able to function. Eretz Yisrael can't accommodate them. Velosiso sam ha'aretz ki rechusham rab. And the land would not be able to accommodate them because they were too big and too rich. They didn't realize that Eretz Yisrael can accommodate everybody and everything. No one ever said that Eretz Yisrael is too narrow or too small for them. Not true. The lo rosh and nikras eretz tzvi. They didn't consider that the Eretz Israel is called Eretz Tzvi. It's the land of the deer. Just like a deer keeps growing. If it gets fatter, its skin expands. Right? So the Eretz Israel can accommodate anything. Just like the skin of the deer can accommodate the fattest deer that there is, the deer keeps expanding if it gets fatter and fatter. The lo rosh and nikras eretz chemda. Shechem chemda avos ha'olam. They didn't realize, they didn't consider that Eretz Israel is called the precious land, the desirable land, that the avos desired. They didn't take into consideration how much Moshe Rabbeinu tried to be able to go into Eretz Israel, how much it meant to him. They were disgusted with this land. They didn't consider the fact that it's a holy land even when it's destroyed. It's the place which enables our prayers to go to Shamayim. They didn't take in consideration that living in Eretz Israel atones for your sins. They didn't take in consideration that if you settle in Chutz Laaretz, you don't have all these tremendous things. Not only that, a person who lives in Chutz Laaretz like he has no God. That's what the Sor HaMor says. This was the problem of B'nai. They thought that it was predestined that they should live outside of Eretz Israel, but the truth is that it wasn't predestined. It was dependent on their free choice, and the reason they chose to live outside of Eretz Israel is because they didn't appreciate Eretz Israel, and therefore they felt that Eretz Israel couldn't provide them monetarily, financially, with what they could get in Eretz Israel. They didn't feel that that they could get in Eretz Israel what they could get in Chutz Laaretz. Comes out that what was the point, the foundation of their mistake, of their sin, that they thought that they could benefit more living outside of Eretz Israel than living in Eretz Israel. Now the truth is that the Torah tells us that Eretz Israel is a land that lacks nothing. Eretz asher lo sechtar kol bo. Nothing is lacking in Eretz Israel. And therefore, to feel that you can gain more in Chutz Laaretz, Eretz Israel can't accommodate what I need. Right? That's a wrong thought. Now, let's analyze that for a second, okay? Without being disrespectful to Eretz Israel. Maybe today, that pasuk is true. Eretz Israel lacks nothing. But when I first came here about 20 years ago, right, Eretz Israel lacked a lot of things that were basic necessities of life, like Skippy peanut butter, like Starkist tuna, Hellman's mayonnaise, just to give you a few of the major things. People used to Kellogg's breakfast cereals, right? People used to bring cartons of them on their lifts in order to be able to survive here. And the truth is that that's true, right? What Israeli tuna fish tasted like, right, compared to what real tuna fish tastes like, there's no comparison. Same thing with the mayonnaise, same thing with the peanut butter, and same thing with the breakfast cereals. Now, Baruch Hashem, you can get all these things in Eretz Israel. So today, the pasuk in the Torah is true. But 20 years ago, how could the Torah have the chutzpah to say, Eretz asher lo sechtar kol bo, when all these staples of life were missing here in Eretz Israel? What does it mean? Huh? Okay, whatever. Everybody has their necessities. One second. So, what does the pasuk mean? Eretz Israel lacks nothing. I mean, I could give you a million other things that Eretz Israel seemingly lacks that that is in Chutz Laaretz, right? Up until a few years ago, there were no 99-cent stores in Eretz Israel. Now there are 2-shekel stores. It has America beat hands down. Now you get a half a dollar store and get the same junk that you can get in the dollar store for half a dollar. In any case, so what's the Torah mean? So let me tell you what I think it means. What I think it means is the following, based on the following Medrash. The Medrash says that Reb Shimon bar Yochai had a kolo. And one of his avreichim, one of his kollel members, went to Chutz Laaretz for an extended amount of time and became rich. And he came back, you know, driving a Cadillac or a Lexus or whatever, and a big cigar in his mouth, big fat wallet, nice bank account. And the other members of the kollel looked at him and they said, hey, you know, this is not so bad. We'll go also for a few years to Chutz Laaretz. We'll also become rich. So Shimon Bar Yochai saw he's going to lose his kollel. Everybody's already going out to get passport photos or whatever, and they're leaving. So he said, look, close your gemaras. Today we're going on a tiul. Took him out into a big valley, and he said, valley, valley, fill up with gold coins. And the whole valley filled up with gold coins. He said, you want money? You don't have to go to Chutz Laaretz for money. Here it is, right here in this valley in Eretz Israel. Go take as much as you want. So they all started to run. He said, oh, wait one second, I forgot to tell you something. Before you go, take a pencil and paper with you. Because keep an exact cheshbon, an exact accounting of what you take. Because in the future world, they're going to take off your olam haba for everything you take here. So you don't want them to take off more than you took, so keep an accounting so when you get there, you'll have a receipt, and if they take off more, you'll be able to complain. All of a sudden, they all decided they want to go back to the Beis Medrash, and they're not interested in taking these gold coins. What's the meaning? The meaning is the following. Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing. If it seems to have something that you can't get here, then maybe you don't need it. Because what you need is what you need for all eternity. And maybe if Eretz Yisrael can't provide what you think you need, maybe it's not something you really need or something that's in your best interest. So therefore, Eretz Yisrael taka lacks nothing. If you have the right outlook on life and you know what you need and you know what's positive for you. But if it's something that you can't get here, then maybe it's something that you don't need. And if you really need it, then maybe you can get it here too. That's the idea. In any case, the truth is that even the Meraglim, who seemingly were cowards, and they were afraid to go and fight and conquer Eretz Yisrael because they thought they would be decimated, and they lacked emunah and bitachon, David HaMelech tells us that their real sin, the underlying sin, was not that. The underlying sin, David HaMelech tells us in Tehillim, was vayimoasu be'eretz chemda. They were disgusted with the desirable land. Now, on the surface, I wouldn't see that. What I would see is they liked the land very much, but they were afraid to conquer it. They didn't have emunah and bitachon. Where do we find that they were disgusted with the desirable land? So I think what David HaMelech is telling us is the following. That, what was the sin of the spies? One sin was that they were afraid to take the risk of conquering Eretz Israel. And the second was that they accepted the Lashon Hara that the spies came back with. And they accepted all those bad things that they heard about Eretz Israel. Okay. What David HaMelech tells us is the following. Had Bnei Yisrael felt Eretz Yisrael was precious, had they really, really desired the land, then neither of those sins would have happened. Why? Because something that you consider important, desirable, worth it, you risk. You could even risk your life for things that you really, really feel are worth it. But if something is not worth it, if it's not worth too much, then you're not willing to risk too much. The risk you're willing to put into something is commensurate to how much you think that thing is important and necessary. Had they really felt that Eretz Yisrael was necessary, precious, desirable, then they would have been willing to take the risk of going and conquering it. But because they didn't consider it precious, desirable, therefore why take any risk? So that's why they were afraid. They weren't afraid just like this. They were afraid because they didn't appreciate Eretz Yisrael. And the same thing. When you love something, al kol pshoyim techasa ava, love is blind, and it covers up all what's it called, all negative, all faults, all blemishes. You don't see them. You don't see them. The that is on tape. And for a minimal price, I will not play that to your husband. See me after the shiur. Had B'nai Yisrael, I'm glad I didn't say that, had B'nai Yisrael loved Eretz Yisrael, had they had a feeling for it, then they would not have accepted the Lashon Hara that the Meraglim came. They wouldn't have heard it. They wouldn't have accepted it. How could you say such a thing? Right? We won't accept it. But they didn't have that great love for Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they were objective. And they could hear Lashon Hara too. They could hear it. Somebody speaks Lashon Hara about somebody you really, really like, you don't hear it. You won't accept it. Somebody that you don't like, you'll accept it and you don't hear it. And somebody that you're objective about to be objective. What is this idea of a ma'asu be'eretz chemda? Why that specific word? And to add to the question, before we discuss what chemda is, what eretz chemda, eretz is called the land, the desirable land, chemda. God does not describe the land as chemda. In the Torah, it never uses that terminology. Eretz Yisrael, when God describes Eretz Yisrael to Moshe Rabbeinu, that you should go and tell the Jewish people, I'm going to take you to a good land, he says, Eretz Tova Urechava, Eretz Zavas Cholov Udavash. That's how God describes Eretz Yisrael. It's a good, broad land that's flowing with milk and honey. But he doesn't mention the word chemda. In benching, when we bench, we say Eretz Chemda Tova Urechava. We add the word chemda first, and we leave out Zavas Cholov Udavash. Now the truth is, the Kolbo says that Chemda means Zavas Cholov Udavash. And therefore, by saying Chemda, you are mentioning Zavas Cholov Udavash. The only problem is, it's out of order. The way God described the land is Tova, Rechava, Zavas Cholov Udavash. So if Chemda takes the place of Zavas Cholov Udavash, it should be, we should say in benching, Tova, Rechava, Chemda. But we don't say it like that. So we'll have to have another answer in a little while. But first, let's discuss what Chemda is. And then we can discuss why the Torah doesn't describe Eretz Yisrael as Chemda, but David HaMelech does, right? And we do, and we say it in benching. The Malbim says that there's a difference between Taiva and Chemda. Both represent desire. Losachmod, losisave, two ways that the Torah describes desiring something. There it's negative, if you have things that you desire that are positive. Taiva is where you desire something irrespective of its merits. You don't desire it because it's desirable, you desire it because you desire it. And therefore, taiva doesn't have to be something you see. It can be something you conjure up in your mind. You want it, the desire starts with you. It doesn't start with the thing you're desiring. Chemda is where you desire it because it's desirable, because of its merits. And therefore, chemda depends on seeing it. You want it because you saw that it's desirable. Taiva is you want it because you imagine that it's desirable. Okay? So chemda emanates from the object, and taiva emanates from the person who is desiring. Okay? You can want things that really are not desirable, but you want them. Or you can want things because they really are intrinsically desirable. That's called chemda. The same thing the Maral says. Chemda is what you see. Chemda emanates from what you see. And therefore the Maral says also that chemda emanates from the essence of the thing, the chomer, the material. It's something that is generated by the physical attributes of the thing that you want. And therefore the word chemda itself means chamud, right? Chamud means something nice, pretty, beloved, right? Something that intrinsically has milas, has merit that makes it desirable. And therefore there's another aspect of chemda. The Rambam says that the prohibition of losachmod, you don't get lashes if you transgress that prohibition, because there's a rule that you only get lashes for a prohibition that involves an action. But if it's something that only involves thought, then you don't get lashes for a sin that involves thought and not action. So therefore, lo sachmot is wanting something, desiring something, okay? And therefore, you don't get malchus. The same Rambam says that you don't transgress the prohibition of desiring something that belongs to someone else unless you go to the bother of getting that thing from the person, either by stealing it or by checking him and pressuring him to sell it to you. You bother him and bother him until you want his car, and only that car, you can't get another one, you want his. And you bother him, call him at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, you sure you don't want to sell your car, put signs on his car like they do here all the time, you park at a red light, right? I'm interested in buying your car, are you interested in selling it or whatever. In my whole time in America, I never had anybody put a sign on my car, right? And my car there was probably better than the one I had over here. And here are constantly people putting signs, you interested in selling your car? In any case, so if you do that, you constantly chip at the person and pressure him or whatever. Should I turn this over? In any case, it's not moving anyway. So. Now it is. Okay. So, the more that you bother the person or whatever, and you finally get it, then you transgress the prohibition. So it's obviously a contradiction. On the one hand, the Rambam says you don't get lashes because lo sachmot is something in the heart. And yet he says that you have to go get it, you have to do an action. So I think one of the answers could be that really the prohibition is wanting it. But there's a shear, there's a certain amount, a measure of how much you have to want it. Just wanting it a little bit is not the prohibition. It's really wanting it a lot. How do I know how much that you really want it? That you go to the bother of getting it. Chemda means that you want it so much that you're willing to go to the means to get it. And if you don't go to the means to get it, you didn't want it that much. So chemda is an intense desire, intense meaning. And beyond that, like we said, the chemda is because the thing itself is practically desirable. Therefore, practically, it's not an abstract, it's something that's real. I have to want to get it, really, because it's a real thing. Taiva can be imagined. So I can live in a fantasy world and have taivas, and I never put them into practice. I never realize them because they're only abstract. But chemda is where it's concrete. I want it because concretely it's desirable. Therefore, I have to put it into concrete terms. It's not just something that's abstract. One second. Eretz Yisrael, part of the sin of the spies was by Masu Be'eretz Chemda. They were disgusted with the desirable land. They didn't see it as something real. They maybe desired it, but abstract. Right? Eretz Yisrael is a nice place to visit. It's like Disney World. Nobody lives there. Right? It's a nice place to come, take your slides, your videos, what's it called, and then bring them back and show them in Chutz Laretz. But to live there? In fact, the Marsha says, what did the spies bring back? They brought back figs, ta'anim, and grapes, and pomegranates. Those are only three of the seven things that Eretz Yisrael is blessed with. Why don't they bring back wheat, barley, olives, oil? Right, those are staples. Says the Marsha, the Meraglim wanted to intimate, Eretz Yisrael is a great place for dessert. It has great grapes, great figs, and great pomegranates. But that's not the staples of life. You can't live there, right? It's a place you can go to visit, right, that's more of a fantasy land. But that it's real? That you can have the staples of life there? No. It's Eretz Ochelet Yoshivera. It's the land that eats up its inhabitants. It doesn't eat up the tourists. Tourists can survive here. But live here? That you should be an inhabitant of Eretz Israel? That's Eretz Ochelet Yoshivera. It eats up its inhabitants, not the tourists. Tourists is a nice place to visit, but it's not a place to live. It's not real. That was part of the sin of the spies. The Sfasemet said that the idea of chemda corresponds to osher, to wealth. The land is a wealthy land. It's a land that gives success. And so too, The Yaros Tavash says that Eretz Chenda intimates that it's the land where a person can reach perfection in this world and the next, meaning the perfection that spans this world and the next. You can have here whatever you need in this world that will ensure you the next world. Interesting maral. In benching, we mention, in the second bracha of benching, you have to mention three things, amongst others. Bris, Torah, and Eretz Yisrael. And we mention them in which order. If you had to pick the order, which order would you pick? L'chora, first came the bris. Avraham Avinu, right, was way back, and he had the first bris, first mitzvah. And then Torah, and then we went into Eretz Yisrael. So if anything, bris should come first, then Torah, then Eretz Yisrael. How do we say it in Benchin? Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava Shratzisha V'nchakul Avoseinu. First thing, Eretz Yisrael. The Al-Bris Choshech Asamte V'Vzareinu. Then the bris. The Al-Torah Choshli Matatanu. Then Torah. Why do we put Eretz Yisrael first? If chronologically we didn't get Eretz Yisrael till after all these things, says the Maral Mikrad, because we weren't Zoche, we didn't merit to get the Torah or the bris only because of Eretz Yisrael. Because we have Eretz Yisrael, where we can live in holiness, then we can have the bris which is holy, and we can have the Torah that's holy. But if we didn't have Eretz Yisrael, we couldn't have a bris, we couldn't have Torah.
But Abraham was already here.
True, but he wasn't given Eretz Yisrael yet. But Abraham didn't give him Eretz Yisrael, he gave it to him for his children. But it wasn't, right? The truth is that could be a part of an answer, because the Chazal say that Eretz Yisrael's muhzekes hi mi'avoseinu. It already was ours from the time of our forefathers, even though they weren't given it mamish, but potentially it was ours already from that time. So Eretz Yisrael comes first. And then the bris, but the truth is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give Avraham Avinu Eretz Yisrael till after the bris. But in any case, that's what the Maral says, that because of Eretz Yisrael, we were zocher to the bris and to the Torah. Now, the Shibulei Aleket, now let's go and see why Eretz Chemda suddenly appears in benching, but doesn't appear in the Torah. Based on everything we said, we can understand. First, let me tell you what somebody else says, the Shibulei Aleket. He says that when Yoshua saw how much Moshe Rabbeinu desired Eretz Yisrael, and he wanted to come in here, and how much the Avos desired Eretz Yisrael, so he added that word Eretz Chemda. Because if he saw how desirable it was for the people he had connection with. In fact, the Medrash says that it's called Eretz Chemda for three reasons. One is because the Avos desired it. The second reason is that all the kings in the world desired to have a place in Eretz Yisrael. Every king had an embassy in Eretz Yisrael, because he said, if you don't have a portion in Eretz Yisrael, you're nobody. You're only a king who's worth mentioning if you have a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So the kings of the world recognized and desired Eretz Yisrael. And lastly, it's called Eretz Chemda because the Beit HaMikdash is here. It's a desirable place because the Beit HaMikdash is here. Those three things make it Eretz Chemda. I was thinking a very simple answer based on all the things that we said. Eretz Chemda, we said, emanates from the desirability of the thing itself. Not you want it from an abstract, conjured up idea that's in your mind, but you want it because you see it, and you see that it's desirable. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm taking you to a good and broad land, he couldn't say, I'm taking you to a desirable land, because they never saw it. And Chemda can only be after you see it. Neither Moshe Rabbeinu nor any of the Bnei Yisrael saw Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Rebbe Shem couldn't describe it as Eretz Chemda. He described it as Eretz Tova or Rechava, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. Only Yehoshua, who conquered Eretz Yisrael, who saw the land, he was the one who composed that second Baruch invention. The Gemara says that there are three Torah blessings invention. The first one, Hazonis HaKol, was composed by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Montel. He composed that first Baruch. The second one, Al Ha'aretz, the Al HaMazon, was composed by Yahushua when they conquered Eretz Israel. It has to do with the land and the food. And the last one was composed by Shlomo HaMelech and David when they built the Beit HaMikdash and they had the Malchus Beis David, Bonei Harachim of Yerushalayim, that was composed by David and Shlomo. So only Yehoshua, who composed the second bracha, when they saw Eretz Yisrael, could call it Eretz Chemda. And the truth is, it can only be called Eretz Chemda from the time that the Meraglim went and saw Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, David HaMelech says the Meraglim were Vayimos of the Eretz Chemda. They were disgusted, they detested the desirable land. Only they could detest the desirable land, the Chemda, because they saw it. And after the Meraglim, the rest of the Jewish people saw Eretz Yisrael vicariously through the Meraglim. They reported what they saw. At that point, it could be called Eretz Chemda. So therefore, it's called Eretz Chemda, in addition to Tovah Rechava, which God described it before they ever saw it. Why did he leave out Zovas Cholav Dvash? So the Mefarshim say, because Zovas Cholav Dvash is not something that is equal to all parts of Eretz Yisrael. There are parts of Eretz Yisrael that are not flowing with milk and honey. That only applies to portions of Eretz Yisrael. So Yehoshua only mentioned those praises that apply to all of Eretz Yisrael. All of Eretz Yisrael is Chemda, Tova, Rechava. But not all of Eretz Yisrael is Zovat Cholav Udvash. So he left that out. God, on the other hand, when he wants to tell Moshe, he's bringing him to a very nice land, he mentioned even parts of the land that portions of it have that praise. Eretz Zovat Cholav Udvash. In any case, what do we get from all of this? That the sin of the spies, and the same sin that was repeated by Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, is one of the reasons why we're in Golus. Because the Medrash says that when the spies came back, it was Erev Tisha B'Av, and that night they cried. And Rabban Hashem said, tonight you're crying for nothing. I'll give you something to cry tonight that will be substantial for all generations. And that crying will atone for your crying tonight. Tonight you're crying that you're afraid to go into Eretz Yisrael. That you don't want Eretz Yisrael at least, right? You're not so interested. You think you can benefit more outside of Eretz Yisrael. You're not willing to take a risk for it. You're willing to hear all the negative things because you don't really appreciate it. It's not to you an Eretz Chemda. So I'm going to give you reason to cry for Eretz Yisrael. Tisha B'Av night, you'll cry not because you don't want Eretz Yisrael, you'll cry because you do want Eretz Yisrael. And because you realize that there's something to cry about. And that you one day will get Eretz Yisrael back. That you haven't given up hope. Because if you give up hope, there's something to cry about. If you gave up hope and there's no hope, then you stop crying. You only don't stop crying when you still feel there's hope. So you'll cry out of hope of getting Eretz Yisrael back and of appreciating Eretz Yisrael. And that will atone for this crime. So it comes out that part of the Korban and the Golus came because of that original sin of not appreciating Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, when will Mashiach come? One thing that will help bring Mashiach, when Klal Yisrael will appreciate Eretz Yisrael intensely, then what's it called? That will be a reason why Mashiach should come. So it's approaching Rosh Chodesh Av, another year of the 9 days. And it's Hashem, still time for Mashiach to come and to turn the 9 days into a yontif. But if that doesn't happen, then we have another time to really take to heart this lesson. And again, most of you here are people who live here in Eretz Yisrael. So I am preaching to the converted. Why am I telling you all of this? But first of all, you should appreciate the decision that you make. You should never take it for granted. You are very wise people. And even though probably most of you could have been more financially successful in Chutz Laretz, even though right now I'm not sure about that altogether, but let's assume that that would be the case, right? And maybe, again, some of those necessities of life that you went without for the last whatever amount of years that you could get in Chutz Laretz, right? But you made a wise choice of choosing what's really important over that which is maybe not so important in the long run, in the light of eternity. And the more that we appreciate that, the more we can influence other people to make that same decision and to realize how important Eretz Yisrael is, and at least, even if for whatever reasons, and again, there are reasons why a person perhaps would be prevented from fulfilling the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael because of his own personal circumstances. And there are personal circumstances that exempt the person from making aliyah. Right? I am not one who says everybody should make aliyah tomorrow. That's absurd. Okay? But even if you don't, you're not able, you should feel you're missing something. You should appreciate what Eretz Yisrael is. That should be a factor in a person's consideration of where he's going to live. Even if in the end he rules it out because he has to rule it out, but it's something that should be considered. And it's something that if you can't live here, you should feel that you're missing something. That there's something beneficial of living in Eretz Yisrael. There's a mile of living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, other people, again, I said there are reasons why people could and should remain in Chutz La'aretz. Some of those reasons are that people depend on them, that they are leaders. They can't just pick up and leave their flock. That's also a possibility. Right? Yes? When you just, well, again, desiring, there are things that you should desire in this world. Okay? There are things that you shouldn't desire, amongst them other people's things that weren't meant for you. Or things that are, you have already enough, and you want more than enough, right? Which is also not necessarily good for a person. So desire is not a bad thing. The Rebbe Hashem put desire in this world that we should desire the right things. If we don't desire anything, we'll never accomplish anything in this world. So there are things to desire. There's even spiritual things to desire, even physical things that you need, right? But when you want them for their own sake, not because how you can use them, you want them just to have them, or you want them for the wrong reasons, or you want something that's not yours and not meant to be yours, then those things are important. Okay, I lied. I thought this would not take a whole time. I didn't realize. Yes. Okay, the sign that Mashiach is coming is when you hear Eliyahu HaNavi say Mashiach is here, right? Not water stains on the kosel, not Torah dumas that are born. All those things may be very significant. I don't know why there's water coming out of the kosel. Somebody said because a pipe broke, okay? Again, I don't know. It could be that it's a sign of something, right? It's definitely a sign that the kosel is wet. More than that, I'm not sure what's a sign. Yeah? Yeah. That. Send this to the computer. I will send it to the person who sends it to the computer.